Welcome, everybody. I'm Jerry Schubel. It's great to have you all here this evening. I'm the president of the aquarium. I want to thank our sponsor, which we lost that logo. Maybe we'll get that back up. Gazette Newspapers, which makes this lecture series possible. And you can go ahead and put the introductory slide back on there. Ken Curtis, many of you know, because Ken Curtis has been affiliated with the aquarium since before we opened, I guess. He's been a volunteer diver, a leader of one of our volunteer divers during that entire time. He's a National Association of Underwater Instructors scuba instructor, and he is the owner of Reef Seekers Dive Company, and he has been volunteering, as I say, since 1998. He received his first scuba certification in 1978 as part of a radio station promotion to set a Guinness World Record for underwater broadcasting. He's done more than 5,000 dives virtually any place there's anything interesting to see. He leads Reef Seekers foreign trips and goes to places like the Sea of Cortez, Fiji, Papua New Guinea, the Bahamas, and he also dives though locally off Southern California in waters that he loves. Since the early 1990s, he's been chairman of Chamber Day, and that is the world's largest single-day scuba charity event that benefits the Catalina Hyperbaric Chamber, which is very important to have that facility in this region. He's an outstanding photographer, and he writes for local and national scuba publications, and he is a familiar face to television viewers in this area. He's hosted TV shows, commercials, infomercials, nationally and internationally. And he's been appointed to several state boards that have helped implement the Marine Life Protection Act. He also serves as a forensic consultant to the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office in case of diving accidents. And when he's not diving, he's running marathons. He's run at least five. So it's a great pleasure to have Ken Curtis with us again this evening. Ken?
Thank you, Jerry. I'm impressed with myself, too. Thank you very much. I need to do... Try that. Okay, Tim, let her rip. There we go. Just so you know, by the way, it's a fairly informal talk. So heckling is encouraged, but realize I give as good as I get. So be careful. This is Gentle Jaws, Diving with Whale Sharks. I actually have two versions of this talk. There's Dentistry Made Easy, because my uncle was a dentist, and I recently had my teeth cleaned, so obviously I'm an expert. So would anybody like the dentistry version? No. You want the whale shark version? Yes. Fine. I'll pander to the crowd. Anyhow, as Jerry said, I am a scuba instructor, a volunteer here, and I own a dive shop. So it was really cool when we got to go. You get whale sharks every now and then around the world. But what we're going to talk about tonight is a specific experience diving with whale sharks down in off of the Yucatan Peninsula. And it's a really, really cool thing, as you will see. But let's give you some basic whale shark facts to get going. I see you guys are writing notes there. You're really putting me on the spot now. But some basic whale shark facts. And if you'd like to be known as a whale shark expert, here's the first thing you need to know. We don't know much. So if you just always say, I really don't know, you too can be a whale shark expert. Whale sharks, we don't know how many there are in the world. They're hard to find at times. So that's one reason we don't know much. In 1992, I want to say it was, I got my first taste of lots of whale sharks down in La Paz, Mexico. And about 2 years later, I was having lunch with Eugenie Clark, who's like one step below Sylvia Earle. And she had just written an article for National Geographic about whale sharks and whale shark researchers. And she said most people who research whale sharks never see them in their lifetime. So it's changed a little bit since then in 20 years, but that's just something to keep in the back of your mind. We don't know a lot, but we can give you some actual stuff we do know. Largest fish in the world. Okay, so they're a fish. They're not a mammal or anything, not anything like that. They're not the largest animal in the ocean. Here's your aquarium in the Pacific test. The largest animal in the ocean would be? Very good. And where can you see one? Right through that wall. Very good. Whale sharks, don't go see the blue whale now. Wait till I'm done. Whale sharks are found worldwide. They're generally in temperate waters. If you drew just sort of a band across the middle of the earth, that's sort of where they tend to be found. They're sort of warm water wussies, if you will. They are plankton eaters, which is interesting because they are not considered a top predator, even though they're huge, because they eat plankton and sometimes they will eat small fish as well. And the maximum length, approximately about 45 feet or so. The average ones we tend to run into down in Mexico are probably 25 feet, something like that. But that's the length of this, you know, this row here. So, I mean, it's a pretty impressive fish. But to give you an idea of 45 feet, it's the size of a city bus. Okay, so just picture a city bus that swims. Not to be confused, it's not an airplane. Is that a cool plane or what? Japan Transoceanair. You know the problem on this flight, though? You know what they serve you to eat? Plankton. That's all they now remember, I give as good as I get, so be careful. Let's take a look at where we find whale sharks around the world. So I mentioned La Paz, down in the Sea of Cortez. We're going to talk about the Yucatan Peninsula. The Galapagos, good spot for them. Off the northern tip of Madagascar. We find them in the Maldives. In fact, a buddy of mine just spent his 63rd birthday watching three whale sharks cavorting under his boat in the Maldives about 2 weeks ago. Ningaloo Reef in Australia is another known large aggregation of whale sharks. And in the Philippines, they find them, they've gotten them to the point where they've conditioned them that the whale sharks will actually come in and be fed small fish and krill and whatever by the fishermen. So they're...
Yeah, they're interesting, they're slow, they're big, they're cool, and you really get a sense of how small you are when you're swimming around them. But you can see we talked about temperate waters. Again, if you draw sort of a line through the middle band of the earth, those are the warm water areas where they are found. Would you like to experience what it's like to see one? Does anybody not want to do it? Because if not, you can just wait outside under the blue whale. This is from... hopefully the video works here. This is from a trip. Watch over there. Here comes the whale shark. Now I am snorkeling. Okay, this is all shot with the GoPro. And here he comes underneath me. And I turn and I kick with him a little bit. Then I decided, you know, I just want to give you an impression about how big he is. I'm going to stop kicking, and he's just going to start moving under the camera. And this will give you an impression how large he is, especially when you get to the tail area. Here goes the dorsal fin, the mora hanging on the side. Look how long this tail is. It's like the old, Remington or whoever was it? It's going and going and going and going and going. Anyhow, that's your whale shark. Where we're going to talk about specifically, and the specific experience we'll discuss tonight, is down here in the Yucatan Peninsula, specifically around the area of Cancun. And there is a small island offshore that is known as Isla Mujeres. And even more specifically, the whale shark area is about 10 miles or so northeast of Isla Mujeres. It moves around day to day, but that's sort of where we're going. So the point is that in terms of where we'll talk about now, we're offshore. We can see land, obviously, but we're way offshore. So we have to watch out for weather and stuff like that. You're in relatively deep water, about 100 feet or so, and there's whale sharks all around. Now, that's not a great picture, because it's taken from, this is not my picture, but this is taken from like about, I think about 4,000 feet up. There's 220 whale sharks in that picture. Let me give you a better idea. That's lower down. There are 68 whale sharks in that picture. The big white blob is a tourist boat, and just above that, you can see two, you maybe make out two pairs of people swimming with the whale sharks. So this is what we get to experience down in this area. This is the largest known congregation of whale sharks in the world. We're not sure how long they've been there, coming there doing it. Because one of the things is, as with many things in the ocean, fishermen one day said, well, like, yeah, they've been here like for years. But because the fishermen don't fish the whale sharks, it's more like the whale sharks are an annoyance than anything else. So it was like no big deal to the fishermen. They didn't, you know, like, I didn't think to mention it to you. But largest known congregation of whale sharks in the world, we think there are 400 to 800 whale sharks here, just in this one spot. They seem to be primarily feeding. There may be some mating going on. There are both males and females. It's about a 5-to-2 ratio. So you women are going, yeah, right on. And the men are going, damn. But about a 5-to-2 ratio. They gather here from May to September. Now, what's the problem with May to September in the Gulf? Who said hurricanes? You're absolutely correct. Hurricanes. That's the area where we do the diving. That happens to be Hurricane Mitch from a Nassau thing. So one of the interesting things would be, what happens to the whale sharks during hurricanes? I don't know. See, I told you, that's a good answer a lot of times. Don't know if they go deep or whatever, but you know, they don't seem to leave because of the hurricane. So it's just something to keep, you know, to keep in mind. And the fact that there are so many whale sharks here, it's a great opportunity for research and for tourism as well. So we'll talk about the research stuff for just a minute or two beforehand. Everything I'm going to, the chart you're going to see and everything else is from a thing called PLOS One, which stands for the Public Library of Science. It's a really cool website, I think. They are international peer-reviewed open access online publications. So that if you guys from taking your notes, and please feel free to use me as a source, because when I say I don't know, obviously I'm an expert. You guys decide you want to write a paper and maybe you can't get it published by, you know, UCLA's marine biology department. You go to PLOS One and they will review it and go ahead and publish it. So it's really cool. It's original research from all disciplines of science and medicine. So the charts you're going to see for just a second or two are from two PLOS One studies on whale sharks. You can Google PLOS One and then just hit whale sharks in their search engine to find them. The guys are Mexican names I cannot pronounce, and a lot of them, so I'm not even going to try, but I'm going to tell you that's where everything is lifted from. The other thing I'll tell you is what I don't like about this map. Usually, dark is water, light is land. Here, dark is land, light is water. So, with that being said, take a look at the map here. And the first area I want to talk about is where the whale sharks were first spotted, Isla Holbox, which is sort of on the northern end of the Yucatan. And one of the issues up there, the whale sharks are coming in to eat plankton. So when we have plankton, what we also get is green water. And from a standpoint of photographing, from a standpoint of you know, just observing, not the greatest conditions to observe in. This slide is actually from La Paz. These are the conditions we get in La Paz as well. But in the Holbox area, the water's generally pretty shallow. So it's 20 feet deep or something like that. So again, it gives you some other options that in deeper water you don't necessarily have. But what's very interesting is where we tend to go, and you can see Isla Mujeres down at the bottom there, between Isla Cantoy and Isla Mujeres, and the little squares are whale shark sightings, or circles I guess those are. The neat thing there is they're not feeding on plankton. Plankton tends to make the water green. If you've ever been here at the aquarium, after we've done a massive cleaning of the exhibits with our power tools, and Jerry's calling down going like, when's this water going to be clean again? Because it gets very dirty. That's what it's like with plankton. The cool thing about Isla Mujeres is they're feeding on fish eggs from a little animal called a tunny. And the fish eggs are clear. And so what that means is we get clear water. Much more better. So it's a neat place to go dive. This is some of the tagging that these guys have done over the past 10 years. I think they've tagged something like 800 sharks, whale sharks, over 10 years. And these are usually radio-type tags. They may pop up and stuff like that. And each color is a different shark. But you can get an idea about how these sharks move around. Now, the concentration of marks on the lower right side, that's the Isla Mujeres area. So there's a lot of them there. But then they wander up and around the black star in the sort of upper left is a spot called the Texas Flower Gardens where we know whale sharks go as well. So they do get around. Coming out a little bit, again, different sharks, but they were tracking. Some are getting over between Florida and Cuba. So the point is, these animals, and again, this is something we don't really know without the tags. These animals tend to move around. We know that they go. This is the one I like the most, because notice the animal that jumped over Cuba. Don't know how. Maybe he was in that whale shark plane. Maybe that was it. Anyhow, this gives you an idea of the range of the animals. The really cool one is this animal right here, which they named Lady Rio. This was a pregnant female that they tracked. And the distance from left to right is about 5,000 or 6,000 miles. And so this animal is off the coast of Brazil. Now, a side note, was anybody here a couple of weeks ago for Dan Fenari's lecture? Nobody? What, one person, okay. Anyhow, Dan Fenari is a guy from Woods Hole. He talked about the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, okay, which is where we have the black smokers, the underwater volcanoes. That's the Mid-Atlantic Ridge on the side there, okay? I don't know, because when I saw this, the first thing I thought was, why do they go to the Mid-Atlantic Ridge area? Is it warmer? Now, Mid-Atlantic Ridge, you know, these smokers are 10,000 feet deep. It's not that warm, but I don't know. And again, it goes back to there's a lot of things we don't know. What we think is that's where Lady Rio and other whale sharks go to give birth. That rather than giving birth in nearshore areas, which most animals in the ocean tend to do, they're giving birth offshore because the animals are safer from predators. But we don't know because no one's really seen a wild whale shark giving birth. So really, if you can figure out where the whale sharks give birth, that's like the holy grail of whale sharkdom. Now, I did a little research, and I think I've got a handle on where it might be. I'm not certain, but I was at Cedars-Sinai the other day, and there's some pretty squirrely-looking kids in the maternity ward that looked a lot, that spot, I don't know. Don't quote me on that, but you never know. Anyhow, let's talk about the tourism angle a little bit for the whale shark dumb, because one of the things that we have happened anytime those of us are interested in ocean conservation is educating people who, well, the nasty term we use is extractors, people who take stuff out of the ocean. And specifically like with sharks and stuff like that, one of the hard things to teach people over the years is you can kill the shark once, but you can take the tourist every single day to go see the shark and you'll make more money in the long run. So this has been, the whale sharks have really been a tourist boon for the whole Yucatan Mexican economy. And by boon, this is like one quarter of the boats that were out there. I can't put it in this form, it should have widened up, but there are like 50, 60 boats out there. Now what's very interesting about this, you generally don't associate the Mexican government with rules, regulations, conservation, but they've really gotten smart. They declared the Yucatan area to be a whale shark reserve around 2009. And they have rules for interacting with the whale sharks. The rules are snorkel only. No scuba is allowed. So is that my doorbell? That's okay. That's okay. It's a dollar for each doorbell that rings, though. You can pay me at the door. You've always got to be with a certified dive guide. Two divers max per guide. So generally what we're doing is two people jump in with the guide, 5 or 10 minutes. Back on the boat, two more people jump in, 5 or 10 minutes. The guides get a great workout. But you know, you're really going, and you'd be amazed at what kind of a workout you do get. 10 divers maximum per boat. So they're really trying to control to some degree the number of boats that are out there, not allowed to touch or feed the animals, and no flash photography. So, and there's a lot of places with some animals, they're talking about doing this with the manatees in Crystal River, Florida. They talk about this in Bonaire when you're shooting seahorses, that we're not sure what effect the flash has. So, but and I'll tell you, it's pretty tough to light up a 25-foot animal anyhow. So it's not that big a deal. There's other dive, for those of you who are divers, there's other stuff to do in the area besides just snorkel with the whale sharks. There's what we call the cenotes. These are limestone caverns, sinkholes that have filled up with fresh water, really, really clear stuff. There's a really cool thing off of between Cancun and Isla Mujeres, which is called the Cancun Underwater Museum. And it is thousands of cement statues of allegedly people in Cancun, and they've got them in little groups and stuff like that. And you go dive around them. It's not the greatest dive in the world, but it's interesting seeing all this stuff. Just for the record, by the way, I don't know who that woman is, so I no connection. This was actually my favorite. This is a guy, and he's in his little bookcase there, and he's got his dog sleeping, and he is the catcher of dreams. So it's really cool, but it's a neat thing to go do while we're in the area. So we don't necessarily whale shark, whale shark, whale shark, whale shark, whale shark. We take a little breaks here. But you came for whale sharks, so let's give you some whale sharks. This is leaving the harbor out of Isla Mujeres, and you go on fairly fast boats. The whale sharks, for the most part, are generally active in the morning. By noon, 1 o'clock, they're done feeding. They've gone deep. We're not sure exactly where they go. So what you have happening is a whole flotilla of boats going out there. And whoever's first on site, they're going to start. They all share information. And it's also pretty easy. You know, hey, there's 50 boats. You think there's whale sharks over there? So it's sort of easy to find them. This is what we're looking for. You guys see what we're looking for? Right there. That is the dorsal fin of a whale shark. All right? So that's what you try to spot. Now, just to be clear, because I want you guys to be experts in whale sharks as well, that is not a whale shark. That's a loggerhead turtle. That doesn't mean there's a whale shark underneath that. That is also not a whale shark. That's a very wonderful Photoshop April Fool's joke that was making its way around. This is a whale shark. But when you look at him, that's a pretty good Photoshop thing. Anyhow, that's what a whale shark actually looks like. They are feeding at the surface. So this is what you see from the boat. And one of the things the boat operators are doing is they're really taking great care to make sure they're not going to bump into the whale sharks and stuff like that. You know, people they can bump into, but we don't want to bump into the whale sharks or anything like that. This is what it looks like underwater. All right, and again, to give you perspective, for those of you photographers, I'm probably shooting with anything from a 10 to maybe a 30 millimeter lens, so I'm relatively close to the whale shark. These are all probably, I'd say, 20 feet or so minimum, maybe 30 feet maximum, average about 25 feet or so. So still a lot bigger than we are, and they definitely get your attention. But this is what they do. They're gulping these, they're pretty much invisible on the eggs, but they're gulping these clear fish eggs down. The fish eggs are floating at the surface, and they just gulp, gulp, gulp. What they do, it's sort of like actually one of our education people, today was my regular dive day, so upstairs one of the education people brought up baleen, and they'd gotten some baleen that they had to dry out and stuff like that. The whale sharks don't have baleen in their mouths, but what they think is the way that they strain the plankton is something similar. They just sort of crush down and the water shoots out their gills and they're able to trap the plankton inside. And when the mouth isn't open, you've got this straight across. That's probably, left to right is probably, the mouth itself is probably about 5 feet, 6 feet in some of the bigger ones. And if you look real close, I don't think I have a laser pointer here, but the eye is right there. So they have these little beady eyes. And they're just like, leave me alone. I just want to suck down some plankton. There you get a better look at the eye right there. But it's cool because you'll be swimming around with these guys, and they'll take a little glance. You know, and they'll take a look, and they'll keep going on their way. You definitely see evidence of this, we presume, is a shark attack, probably. If you look at the teeth marks there. It can also be a boat strike. This is actually a manatee from Crystal River, Florida. That animal got run over by a boat. And if you think how a propeller goes, you know, three blades, turns, goes forward, turns, goes forward, turns, goes forward, which is why you get those kinds of lines. So, you know, space as close together as it was on the whale shark, that may have been a bite, but you never know. Maybe hard to see from where you are, but if you can see dead center under the dorsal, that's, I don't know if it's a current tag or just remnants of a tag. But again, these guys who've been doing the research in the area have tagged, like I said, I think about 800 sharks over the period of about 10 years. And they also track sharks. Are the sharks coming back? Is this a one-time visit? Or do they come back again? And I don't remember offhand what the percentage is, but a relatively high percentage, I mean, which might be 30, 40%, they see year after year, because we'll show you later on, the spots on the whale shark are like a fingerprint, and they will identify the whale shark very, that's how you identify them. The same way with, if you know about manta rays on their white belly have markings like, you know, freckles. That's how we identify the manta rays. Same idea with the whale sharks, though. That's a lot tougher, I think. This is what they look like when they come right at you, and he decides, okay, I'm going to suck in some plankton right now. And he generally doesn't care that you happen to be in the way, so he will just keep coming right up and sucking down that plankton. Very sad. Occasionally they suck down a diver. Not really. He's behind them. I actually did convince one person I showed this slide to. Yeah, that was the last we saw of Hyere, and he was our guide, so we had to go home. Anyhow, we definitely get multiple whale sharks at times. Sometimes if you get there on a good day, I mean, you're literally sitting there going like, okay, I'll shoot this one. Oop, I'll shoot this. Whoop, oh, there's one over. Oop. So it's really cool. And the whale sharks are amazingly adept at not colliding with each other. And you'll see them turn and get out of the way, and they're actually pretty good about not colliding with the people as well. From our standpoint, you got to remember there's boats all around, there's boats maneuvering all around, they're picking up their people, so that's just something we always keep in mind. But the good thing is, and this is another reason you don't want to do scuba diving there, because we're snorkeling, everybody's on the surface. So you can always, the boat operators can always see where you are, and the boats are designed in a way that they got pretty good visibility all around the boat. All the whale sharks have some sort of a remora or something with them. Whale sharks basically become like little traveling ecosystems. So they might have some little fish following them. They absolutely will have remoras around them and stuff like that. And the remoras are going to eat scraps or use the whale shark as cover or whatever they need to do. And the remoras might be found anywhere on the whale shark. Can you see the remora? Let me try to help you out. Can you see the remora? Does that help? Is that cool or what? I don't know why that guy lives in the whale shark's mouth, but he does. It's like I tell people, when I was in Palau, I was at a spot called German Channel, and it's a cleaning station for sharks and manta rays. Loretta's nodding because she knows, she's heard this story before. And I'm sitting there, and I watch about a 9 or 10 foot reef shark come sliding in, about 60 feet deep. Comes sliding in, and he stops, drops his tail, opens his mouth. And all the little reef fish come zipping up off the reef and jump in his mouth. And he sits there, and when he's done, he goes, and they all jump out, and he goes on his way. And I go, who told these fish this was a good thing to do? How did they decide this was okay? And I have the same question here. Who told this remora, jump in the whale shark's mouth, it'll be fine? I don't know. Therefore, I'm an expert. Again, sometimes you get the multiples coming head on. Sometimes all you get is a little bit of a tail. But it's really cool because we have another video that hopefully will work. This plays a little choppy at times. But here's the whale shark on the surface. This is like 3 or 4 different things. So the whale shark's going by on the surface. He's turned around. He's coming right by the boat. Now, I'm just standing on the boat shooting that. But you can see how slow that they move. This is one of our guys from the boat. He's got his whale shark there. Rob's getting right up. Oh, cool. And go, Rob, there's another one to your left. Do I go left? Do I go right? Do I go, oh, I'll go to the right. And, of course, the one to the left comes right over our way. But you can really see how he's gulping down the water. And so what they're doing is they're just taking that gulp, sucking it in, filtering it out, sucking it in, filtering it out. And underwater, this is what it looks like. Not the same shark, but it's the same idea. So you can see him opening his mouth. You can see the water going in the top. And so they'll just filter then out the little fish that they get in there. So it's a pretty amazing, you know, way for them to really exist. And the amazing thing, too, is that an animal this big can exist on stuff this small. I mean, that to me, to be honest with you, is just the most amazing thing. Because you would associate, it's like we're feeding, you know, we do the feeds here, for those of you who have been to the aquarium before. And so, like, if we're in Blue Cavern and we're feeding the sharks or the black sea bass, we got big fish, you know, sardines, mackerel that we're feeding them. If we're feeding smaller fish, we got smaller fish. So you think plankton, you know, whale sharks, you should be feeding them fish like this. You should be feeding them Queensland groupers or something like that. But you don't. You feed them the plankton. And again, they just merrily go on their way, no problem, no problem at all. Now, I mentioned before that the way you identify whale sharks is by their spots. And these are actually two different whale sharks. So where the PLOS One guys are focusing on is left side of the shark, behind the gill slits and the pectoral fin. So if you look here, same area, different spot pattern. And look there, same area, different spot pattern. Now, I don't know how you'd name them or figure it out later on that this guy came back and I saw him before, but that's how they do it. And that's where, if you dive or if you go around, that's where still photographs and videos are tremendously valuable to any researchers. There's actually a couple of manta ray researchers in various parts of the world that I share photos with, because they just say, if you get good belly shots, let us have them, because that's how we identify who's who. And it's sort of the same thing here. But at times, you know, even out at Isla Mujeres, you can get visibility problems. Now, the cool thing is, it's not the plankton that's causing the visibility to go down. It's the stupid manta rays. You can't see the whale sharks for the manta rays. That's a great complaint to make. How many whale sharks did you have? I don't know. The manta rays wouldn't get out of the way. And when you think about it, the manta rays are eating the same type of plankton and doing the same sort of thing that the whale sharks are doing. So they absolutely coexist. They don't really fight for room. But because they're both fairly big animals, and this is what a feeding manta ray looks like. He's got those cephalic lobes down, and he's scooping water through and again, straining it through his gills. You can also see the manta rays have been tagged as well. So it's, it provides a really unique research opportunity for the people that do this on a much more serious basis than I do to look at stuff. And you know, what I like to, I was talking with someone earlier, and we were talking about the idea between scientific, verifiable scientific data and what we call citizen science. And when Jerry and I were talking about it, and, you know, do you want to get verifiable scientific data, which takes forever to collect, and you're going to get this much of it, but it's really accurate? Or do you want to take people like me and you guys, and you'll make observations, you have a little bit of knowledge, and we can get this much data, but it's not necessarily 100% accurate, but it gives you an idea. And when you marry the two together, take all of this stuff and take this stuff and sort of figure out what's what, you can actually get some really good insights into what's going on in the ocean. Sometimes, by the way, the whale shark chases you. Sometimes you chase the whale shark. But it's really a very cool and unique experience that I would encourage those of you who are comfortable in the water, whether you are snorkeling or scuba diving, to try at least once in your life, because this is a smile that when you look at it and it faces you head on, you will not be forgetting. Now, I will tell you, this is the commercial alert. If anyone's interested, I am going back again this August. It's not an aquarium trip, it's a Ken Curtis trip, but again, one thing I do is take people diving and take people to places in the world. So if you're at all interested in this, and all you need to be is a snorkeler, you don't have to be like a world-class diver or anything like that, it's in August. You can get details on my website, reefseekers.com. You can contact me, it's real tough to remember, myname@AOL.com. But it's a really, really cool experience that I guarantee will be a once in a lifetime, or twice if you go again in 2015 with me, experience. So I am happy at this time, under the direction of Mr. Schubel, to entertain whatever questions you might have.